few years ago, artists around the country were invited to enter a competition for the design of a memorial commemorating Vietnam veterans. It was a blind competition, that is, the judges examined the proposals without knowing who submitted them. When the winner was announced, everyone was surprised to learn that the proposal was the work of a 21-year-old woman, an artist and architecture student who is virtually unknown and who was only 13 at the time of the ceasefire. With me is Maya Lin, who designed the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, which was dedicated on the Washington Mall in 1982. The V-shaped, polished black granite walls inscribed with the names of the war dead proved to be very controversial. Some veterans opposed construction of this monument because they thought its somber tone failed to glorify the veterans and therefore could be interpreted as an anti-war statement. In compromise, a second artist was commissioned to create a more traditional monument, a statue of three soldiers, which will be installed near the memorial's entrance in a few months. Maya Lin is currently a candidate in the Yale Master of Architecture program. She's in Philadelphia to install her design for the set of Trio, a musical which opens next Thursday night as part of the American Music Theater Festival's premiere season. The festival is also presenting the Gershwin's musical Strike Up the Band, jazz composer Anthony Davis's opera in progress, Malcolm X, and Emperor Jones starring Cleavon Little. For more information about these American Music Theater Festival productions, you can call 925-0600. That's 925-0600. Maya Lin, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you very much.
Before we talk about the current work that you're doing and your set design for Trio, I'd like to talk with you a little bit about the Vietnam Memorial, which you designed, which I'm sure all of our listeners are familiar with in concept, even if they haven't had the chance to visit it yet. Why did you enter the competition? Did you think you had any chance of winning? I think most people are very cynical that when they're unknown, they don't stand a chance.
Absolutely not. I had no chance of winning. I didn't even design it for the competition. I designed it as part of a course I was taking at Yale. The course happened to be on funerary architecture. We saw advertisements for a competition, and it gave us the idea to incorporate a Vietnam Veterans Memorial theme into our own class. And so I designed this as part of a class project, and after designing it, the real competition hadn't really gotten started. A few professors and students said, it's very strong, you should submit it. You'll at least get an honorable mention, because it was a very strong idea. And I did it much more on that level. I wanted to say something. I wanted to say what I thought the Vietnam Memorial should be. I don't know who was more surprised, they or me, when it finally turned up in that, like, May, right as I was about to graduate, that the chosen design was mine.
You submitted a picture of it, but you also submitted a written statement.
Well, you were allowed 2 30-by-40-inch panels. Usually in a competition, they're usually not totally open to the public. They're closed. They're by invitation only. This one was one in which anyone 18 or older could enter, because I think part of the goal of the competition was to get people to be aware of the Vietnam veteran, the returned veteran who was ignored. So all you had to do was submit 2 30-by-40 panels, totally anonymous. Your name could not appear anywhere on the boards. And on that, you had to have your standard section plans, elevations at a certain scale, and anything else you wanted to submit that you thought best described your design. And I my drawings tend to be very impressionistic, very pastel, very, as you might jokingly call them, smudge drawings, practically incomprehensible as real works. They're much more emotional or much more impressionistic. And so along with the design, I took about a month to write, after I had designed it, a one-page description of the memorial, its concept, its basic fundamental theme, etc. And I think that's what caught the jury. Most of the designs they saw were real projects, sort of architect offices had designed something that could be built. And I gave them an idea that was fully there but not fully realized as far as hard lines, hard tacks.
Can you describe to us the ideas that you suggested to the panel?
Sure. First of all, it's a piece that, it's an environmental sculpture. You have to walk through it to really begin to understand it. So in a sense, you couldn't just draw it. So I walked them through the memorial. At first, as you walk in it, you see it simply as a black rift in the earth, or two black rifts, since this opening within the park itself is the two walls. And as you walk down into it, the names get more and more plentiful. So by the time the wall is taller than your head, you are surrounded by a sea of names. And it's that sense of the overwhelming numbers. And when you get to the origin where the two walls meet, you see there 1959, as if you'd open a book on the upper right-hand side, and at the bottom of the book on the other side would be the close of the war, 75. So not only is it just the list of the dead names, because they're in chronological order, and because they center around the central time, the war becomes complete, beginning and end meet. And any veteran who knew of someone on that wall can find a name, and chances are he'll find the name of another friend who also died. I'm not saying it's pleasant at first. I think it's a very strong memorial. It makes a lot of people cry. And yet, as I went on to say in the statement, death in the end is a very personal and private matter, and it is up to each individual to come to terms with the loss, but you have to accept the loss before you can begin to walk away from it and that time. That's the basic concept of it. It becomes a very personal, private memorial, no matter how many people are there, no matter what. When you go up and you see one name and you see yourself reflected in that name, it's just you and the piece. No one's trying to tell you what to think. No one's trying to make any statements, but you have to walk out of there with a new feeling, with a new remembrance or whatever. You have to put the past behind you, sort of a thing.
Were you surprised at the controversy that the piece provoked?
Not really. I expected the controversy to come up a lot sooner. We went through Washington for months getting unanimous approvals from all the commission boards, which is amazing. Usually you take anything into Washington architecturally and it gets little by little minced apart. This was so simple. The boards pretty much left it alone, the fine arts commissions. The controversy came up inevitably. I think a lot of it was expectation. The war was controversial. The memorial would be. Yes, it's abstract, but yes, the Washington Monument is abstract. I think a correct correlation would be that someone wanted to put a statue of George Washington on top of the Washington Monument. It took 70 years for the Washington Monument to be built. They had to halt construction at one time because there was such an opposition that people were throwing the stones into the tidal basin. And there's a two-tone color in the Washington Monument. I would have to consider the Vietnam Memorial, in the end, despite a year of controversy, sort of low-key. It was very misunderstood until it is seen. It's something that I had such a trouble drawing up to describe it that I ended up writing about it. And I think a lot of people, until they saw it, really read in the papers, it's a ditch, it's below ground, it's a sunken V. They didn't know what it was, but they kept hearing these things. It's, quote, you know, a black ditch. I wouldn't want a black ditch either. It's not until you're there that you actually see that it's a very shallow park within another park, and it's a very peaceful place. I think they kept imagining it as being something terrifying or horrific, which it really isn't.
Is it in its realization the way you imagined it when you were first drawing up the plans?
Yeah. It's a funny thing. It's not even as I was first drawing up the plans. I tend to work mostly in models or just in my head in my sculpture and the art that I create. I was at the site and I just imagined taking a knife and cutting open the earth and opening it up and then quickly polishing the earth's edges so that it's not as if you've put two thick, heavy objects, two walls down into here. You've pretty much created a face between the world of the light and this quieter world behind the names and the dead. It's very close. The first time I saw it, I wasn't even here for groundbreaking. There's a thing where if you walk away from the project if you don't watch it being constructed, when you come back and see it all at once, you know how close it is to what you imagined it. Whereas if you watch the process of any design, you start to modify your goals and what you want to see. You don't realize changes that you might have realized. And so when I came back, not only had groundbreaking taken place, but most of the excavation work had been done. The retaining wall was going in. And I was terrified because the space was very close to what I had envisioned in my head. The only thing is I would have loved the walls to have gone up blank and to have people there carving name after name. It's something that at Yale, and when I was a freshman and sophomore there, this one man was carving in the names of the people from Yale University who had died in the Vietnam War, and he was. It seemed such a wonderful gesture. They gave their life. We could at least give them the time to carve their name. There was something precious in that token gesture, except would have taken like 10 years, as many $1 million, and not enough stone carvers to really do it. But that's about the only thing that really has changed. I mean, it really hasn't in the end, but it's very close to what I wanted.
Did you intentionally stay away so that you could see it suddenly in its form, and that so you wouldn't be exposed to the step-by-step thing and have your own conception slowly change?
Yeah, plus the architect of record who was working with me on it, they were pretty much, I was in charge of all visual calls. They were in charge of getting it built, supervising construction. And it's Cooper Lecky in Washington. They did a fantastic job. And I knew that I could trust them totally. As long as you know you have someone there who pretty much knows what you want, there is that ability, that freedom to walk away. I think you can do it on something like the memorial because it is simpler than a piece of architecture. I think the nightmare with architects is that what they design is never what they get built because there's just so many different calls that go on set. The stage set for Trio was a prime example of I drew up some plans, but my plans, my working drawings just aren't that strong. Plus, there were a lot of details that had to get worked out in design. So I was there during construction for the solid week and a half, and whenever a carpenter had a question, I could answer it. And I know you can't do that in architecture, but you could afford to do it for this set. And it was just wonderful working in Brooklyn with my crew, who did a great job. And at first, when I walked on the set, it was like, you know, who are you, sort of a thing. And within the week, it was pretty good rapport to get this thing built and up the way I wanted it.
I want to talk with you more about the set, mm-hmm. but just a couple of other things about the memorial I'd really like to hear about. What do you think of the statue that's being built now that's going to stand in front of the memorial of the three infantrymen?
It doesn't stand in front of the memorial. There was a push to have it there, which I think would have done the same thing as if you put a statue atop the Washington Monument, you turn the Washington Monument into one of the tallest pedestals the world would ever need. If you put some objects right in the center of this, where the two walls meet, you turn the walls into a background, a backdrop, sort of violating what I consider to be a very sacred space. Where they are planned to be is sort of an entranceway plaza that's far enough away so that you've got obviously two different works of art. Some people wanted this, some people didn't want that, and the compromise was made. Luckily, I don't think it compromises either piece. They're each allowed their own space to breathe, which, you know, I have no objections to. I think initially when it all started out, the idea of putting things on top of one another, I don't ever see an instance where two works of art, especially, you know, realistic versus abstract, whatever, 20th century versus 19th century, where one is on top of the other. It seems a very violent gesture that hurts both works of art in the end. So I did object to that, but not to what is presently planned.
People really marveled that you, who were only 13 at the time of the ceasefire, had designed the memorial. Do you have any memories of the war being fought?
No, not really. I think the memories I had were sort of you would read it in the papers, you would see it. I grew up in Ohio. Not Kent State, but Ohio University had a lot of the riots that my parents sort of, you know, kept me away from. It was just not something you wanted your little child to be out and a part of. So they became, in a sense, a very abstract occurrence. No, the comprehension wasn't there, really, till I got older, till I was in college. And then looking back and starting to sift through the history of that time and that era, you were under the realization that, yes, something like Kent State did occur, that you had college kids protesting a war and being killed. That I think the first time I realized that, that sort of shocked me. And at the same time, I think it wasn't until I started working with veterans after the competition had been decided that I saw the other side, that you had these people going off to war, whether they believed in it or not, it doesn't matter. A lot of them died. A lot of them came back and were called murderers. They became, they took on a lot of the blame for something they really weren't responsible for. And it was very sad. Just being there at dedication, I didn't feel like I was a part of that dedication for the memorial. It was the first time a lot of these people had seen friends from the war. And I started crying. They had people who, friends who had died in that war, who they never heard of again. It must have been terrible to come back to this country and to be spat at. I mean, for doing what? For doing nothing. For fighting in something they believed in. And so it's a funny memorial because it's a memorial that was built by this nation, private donations. And it was started by a group of veterans. The government did not start this memorial. The veterans themselves had to give themselves their own homecoming. And that's a tragedy that probably shall never be made up. But I don't think we can ever really do anything for that.
What was it like for you to receive so much publicity when you were, still a student? Did it change your relationships with other your friends or your teachers?
I lost touch with a lot of my friends. I was just graduating from Yale as a senior, and the next year after graduation, I spent in Washington, and it was crazy. I was pretty much always in meetings or working on design, fighting. And to get anything built, I think you have to fight and fight very hard for it. And as a result, I was very isolated. And there were a few people I met in Washington who really, really helped. A few journalists, a few architectural journalists who pretty much stood behind me and would talk me through times of what am I going to do now as far as design. But other than that, it wasn't until the thing was dedicated and built. I was trying to go to school at Harvard, and that's when the whole controversy blew up, and I was finding myself 3 days in Cambridge, 3 days in Washington. The people at school had no idea what I'd be doing in Washington. I was meeting with lawyers and meeting with the fund, and it was just basically so unpleasant that, yes, I dropped out of school for a while, took a very quiet job just to keep going. Mentally, I wanted to do something, but I just didn't want to be at all exposed to people for a while. And then have returned to Yale Architecture School to sort of start back at ground one. Yeah, I think it did throw me off track, and I want to just continue my education.
My guest is Maya Lin, who designed the Vietnam Veteran Memorial, which is now in Washington, D.C., and she's in Philadelphia to install the set that she designed for Trio, which opens next Thursday as part of the American Music Theater Festival. In the set for Trio, you've incorporated some of the concepts that I know you're working a lot with now, having to deal with space and light. Can you discuss a little bit some of those concerns?
Right. It's hard to discuss. What I really like about it, say, choose something like light, I call it intangible architectures. Architecture is usually taught in plans, sections, elevations, drawings, physical presences, and I'm very much interested in, say, the work of artist James Turrell, who manipulates your perception of a space through light. And it's not with lasers, it's not with holography, but it's just how your eye perceives of a space when lit differently, and I'm fascinated by it.
How are you working that into a stage set?
Which stage set?
It's just a lot of movement happening within it. It's not right. Like in a gallery room or something where you can just control the light and then keep people out of the room.
Uh-huh.
And,
well, when I took on Trio, the one question I did ask early on is who my lighting designer, or who the lighting designer would be. And he's Victor Enyutan, and he's great. And I had heard he was great. And working with the set, it's a one act. Three women. It's a lyric opera. The music I've always found to be just beautiful. And yet they did not want a real set. And once the actresses went on stage, they never left. So they were asking almost for an environmental art piece that the actresses could work within. And I wanted to give them something that, at the start, I just started listening to the music and different zones of space started to form. And yet, how do you make it change throughout the play when there are no scene changes? And so I made a few partitions or walls that move, and the fact that they're all made of scrim material, so that they're transparent at times, they're opaque at times, they're translucent. I basically was putting a lot of faith in the lighting designer to take the set that can be transformed very easily with light and to really make it magical, which I think he's done a fantastic job of doing.
You're an artist studying architecture. Is your ambition to build buildings or to use architectural concepts to design art?
Both. I get in trouble on both sides, probably more so from architecture since I'm in the program there. Now, I want to build buildings. I think that's why I'm in architecture. I love architecture as sort of an anonymous manipulation of people through space. Not in a harsh way, but to me, architecture is very much psychologically based. You really have to understand people to make them happy, to make them feel good. And so much of what I do is very intuitive, very sculptural. You can get away with it in art, but in architecture, when they train you, they want discipline, they want order, they want rationale, they want this, they want process. And so that's why I'm in architecture school, because I'm very untrained. I'm very undisciplined. I will say, I want this. And they'll say, no, you've got more of a reason than you want it. And I say, well, I'll work on it for a while and maybe. But yeah, I'm sort of working on an interface. I want always to be between art and architecture. I won't treat my work as either art or architecture. It is very much environmental.
Do you find yourself sculpture. Resisting some of that discipline and order that's enforced in the architecture school?
Finding it tooth and nail. And they think I'm finding it. I don't. I sort of blink dumbly, go about my business. Yes, there. I'm finding it. I'm finding it, I guess, from what? The way I design, the way I create is not at all, in today's definition of architecture, architectural, I guess. And yet, I love the results, sort of just what I see. And so I don't define what I'm doing. I just enjoy making these things and experimenting with them. And if someone wants to call it art or if someone wants to call it architecture, they can, you know, bicker for eons about that. And I'd rather just keep going on working, or, you know, I'd even use the word playing sometimes, which really drives architects crazy, because, you know, you don't play, it's serious. And I don't mean to negate or denigrate it. It's just I don't treat my work lightly, but there is some sort of a light quality to it, literal, figurative, whatever.
Do you think you'll be doing more set design?
I hope so. I really have enjoyed working on Trio. It's been fascinating. Noah Ain, who wrote the music, I guess had interviewed 10, 12 set designers and did not want a real set and had heard me and heard of me and called me up. And I was hesitant at first because I was still in school and I had never done a set before. But listening to the music, I just found it very beautiful. And what she was trying to do was a challenge to me, because I didn't know. You know, you don't want a real set. You want something sort of more intuitive. And it also just sort of tugged at me to want to do this. And I've had, I mean, it has been difficult. It's been frustrating as hell, because I've been trying to get my work done at Yale and also do this, which is the people I've been working with. And everyone have been just wonderful. So it's been very exciting.
Well, I want to wish you the best with your studies and with the set design work that you're doing and all. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
For talking with
okay.
us. I've been speaking with Maya Lin, and she's in town to oversee the construction and installation of a set that she designed for the musical Trio, which opens a week from today. That's next Thursday.
Right.
In Philadelphia. And it's part of the American Music Theater Festival's premiere season. Other performances that they'll be doing this season include the Gershwin Strike Up the Band, jazz composer Anthony Davis's opera in progress, Malcolm X, and Emperor Jones, which will star Cleavon Little. For more information about these American Music Theater Festival productions, you can call 925-0600. That's 925-0600. And Maya Lin designed the set for Trio. She also designed the Vietnam Memorial, which is in Washington, D.C. Thanks again for talking with us.
Oh, you're welcome.